the gender gap is actually a confidence gap. So when we look at the data all over the world, not just in North America, but that there is very much still a gender gap that exists. And what we, when we look at it further, we look at it and we say, well, you know, what is this gender gap about? And what we've found is that it's very much a confidence gap. And when I say that to women, it's really funny because I've spoken to a lot of my female friends who are entrepreneurs. You and I have spoken about this. And whenever I say it's a confidence gap, the women are always like nodding, like, yes, it's a confidence gap. And going one step further, not only is it a confidence gap, but I'm actually calling it a self-efficacy gap, where women don't feel like they have the self-efficacy, the belief, and the ability that they can actually achieve the goal.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. Today's episode was important. I sat down with my dear friend, Adele Tevlin, and we spoke about a new era of leadership, something we are both incredibly passionate about. In particular, we dissected the idea of female leadership. What does it mean to be a female leader, both for ourselves as women, but also why the world needs us now more than ever? We looked at this idea of gender gap and how gender gap is really a symptom of self-efficacy and lack of confidence and some of the root causes as to why we simply can't break through the way we want to. In the next 45 minutes, what we did together is we laid out a blueprint for female leadership. I truly believe that there's a deficit of leadership systemically in our society, and that this is really an opportunity for a new type of leader, a new authenticity, a new way of doing it. And I believe that we all have it within our capacity to be able to deliver upon this. This interview is so important to me, and frankly, it was a heck of a lot of fun. Adele is absolutely brilliant. She is in the midst of her master's degree at Harvard. She has a breadth of knowledge and an incredible passion on this topic. I can't wait for you to hear it. It is my pleasure to introduce you to my friend, Adele Tevlin. Adele Tevlin, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Hi, Megs. How are you?
I'm good. We were just chatting before we hit record, as it were, and we have a big episode coming for all of you. We're going to go really deep and really hard on what it means to be a leader as a woman, and this is something that you and I, we could jam about this all day long.
All day, every day.
And we're going to talk to you guys about how you can maybe do that with us down the road. But for today, just to give people context before we really unpack this super important topic, can you just give everyone a bit of a background in terms of who you are, how you got to where you are right now, and why you are so passionate about this topic?
Thank you, Megan. I love you. And I'm so excited to be having this conversation with you today. So basically, a little background on me is I've always been passionate about human behavior. I have, you know, a background in neuroscience and nutrition and cognitive behavioral therapy. And I've run a company called Adele Wellness for 10 years, which is a high performance weight loss consultancy for executives, where we look at, you know, a combination of mindset and mindfulness and nutrition to create sustainable change. So I've been in the sort of, you know, behavior change space for quite a while. What got me really interested in talking about female leadership and how we're kind of transitioning to this topic right now is that over the last 3-4 years, I was going into corporate and doing workshops for leadership teams, all on resilience and mindset and stress reduction, because working on Bay Street, as you know, because you work on Bay Street too, You know, you meet a lot of very, very successful people who are very stressed out, very burnt out, and often very unfulfilled. So I got very curious about this. I actually started a master's at Harvard last year in human behavior and human psychology. And I started to really think about what I wanted to work my thesis on. And what actually came very kind of organically to me was that what I noticed when I was going out to these corporate workshops, talking about leadership and resilience and all this stuff, is that it would still be predominantly men in the room with very few women as leaders. And here we are, like it's 2019, we're talking about female empowerment, and yet there aren't a lot of women at the top. And then the women that are at the top, the women that are CEOs or directors or VPs, they've had to be so in their masculine in order to lead, and we can dive more into that later. They've had to be so in their masculine that they've annihilated the feminine part of themselves. So I just got very curious about all of this. And it's what I've embarked at Harvard to really study is like why there's still this gender gap that exists at elite levels of leadership and what's actually getting in the way of women rising, truly rising from a place of empowerment and actually helping close that gender gap so that we can lead effectively. So yeah, that's a bit of in a nutshell.
Okay. So what's getting in the way? We don't need 45 minutes. We could just go there right now.
Yeah. Well, so basically my thesis is that the gender gap is actually a confidence gap. So when we look at the data all over the world, not just in North America, but that there is very much still a gender gap that exists. And when we look at it further, we look at it and we say, well, you know, what is this gender gap about? And what we've found is that it's very much a confidence gap. And when I say that to women, it's really funny because I've spoken to a lot of my female friends who are entrepreneurs. You and I have spoken about this. And whenever I say it's a confidence gap, the women are always like nodding like, yes, it's a confidence gap. And going one step further, not only is it a confidence gap, but I'm actually calling it a self-efficacy gap, where women don't feel like they have the self-efficacy, the belief and the ability that they can actually achieve the goal. And there's a few reasons why we can go into that as well. And so what I'm actually, you know, very much doing right now in my business and kind of launching something new, which is helping women bridge the gap by helping them increase their confidence and their self-efficacy. Because women, we know this, like women are really born leaders. You know, we're collaborative and creative and have empathy and compassion and all these beautiful traits. But the thing is, if you don't have the confidence, what is that going to look like? Are you actually going to go after the pursuits and the dreams that you want? And so that's what I've been finding is that it's a confidence gap.
When you reference self-efficacy, what do you mean?
Albert Bandura talks about self-efficacy. So self-efficacy is by definition, it's one's belief in their ability to achieve a goal. So it's not your ability to achieve a goal, it's your belief in the ability to achieve a goal. So for example, you can have domain-specific self-efficacy or general self-efficacy. For example, like let's say, for example, I know I'm really good at Pilates, okay? But just because I'm good at Pilates doesn't mean that I'm going to feel like I'm good at playing hockey. So self-efficacy can be very domain-specific, like I'm very good at this one thing, or it can be more general. What they say is the more self-efficacy you have in different arenas, the more you feel confident about your belief in doing something new. And there's a few ways that you can build self-efficacy. One of those ways is by getting verbal praise by someone. So if you think about like women in leadership, if you work in a corporate environment, right? First of all, if you're working in corporate and most of the people above you are men, okay? And one of the ways in which you build self-efficacy is by modeling someone that's like you. So if you have people that are in leadership that are not like you, AKA they're not even the same gender. And if you're not getting a lot of verbal praise, like very good job, which doesn't happen a lot, maybe at high levels of leadership, then it doesn't give you an opportunity to build those skills. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yeah. So there's five ways that we can build self-efficacy. And one of those ways is visualization. So visualizing yourself achieving the goal. It's why when they do those studies of basketball players who visualize dunking into the net versus the ones that actually practice, the ones that are actually visualizing it have almost on par the same scores or as the ones that are actually practically doing it, because you're using your reticular activating system. So basically, there's a part of your brain that when you visualize, it's actually using the same neural networks as if you were actually practicing it. So visualization is key. Verbal persuasion for self-efficacy is key. So having someone say, you know what, Megan, that was a really great job. You did amazing. Modeling someone like you. So exactly what you said. So if you're a woman and you're looking for a model, like, I don't know about you, Megs, but most of the mentors in my life were men for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Only more recently, I would say in the last 3-5 years, I've had women mentors, but most of the mentors I've had in my life are men. So it's like, what happens if you have a mentor that's a man, even if he's amazing, in a woman's mind, you're going, well, he's a man. So I actually, yes, that's great. But can I really achieve that? Because I'm a woman. Make sense? Mm-hmm. So those are some of the ways that one can build self-efficacy. But because we're not, the way that corporate is run or the way that leadership is run isn't structured to necessarily help women build self-efficacy, this then feeds into their self-esteem, because self-efficacy and self-esteem are very like inextricably linked. They're not the same concept, but they're very linked. So if you have low self-efficacy, you might have low self-esteem. If you have high self-efficacy, you might have high self-esteem. If you have high self-esteem, this is also going to link to your confidence. So these are all the ways in which, when you look at, you know, to kind of bring it back to, so what's the gender gap really about? In my mind, in my opinion, and based on the research, it's really self-confidence, self-esteem, and self-efficacy.
I love this. And as you're saying it, I just love having frameworks around these concepts that we intuitively feel. As you were saying this, one of the things about, I talk about this with my husband, Greg, all the time, because he was a really elite athlete in soccer and swimming. And we talk about this with our girls all the time, because they're in all sorts of activities. And I said, I was in all sorts of activities. But as you're talking about this concept of self-efficacy, I'm curious, I'm sure someone's studying this, but I was like, I felt as you were speaking that me having had an opportunity to experience achievement and confidence in a variety of different sports and activities, I think actually served me well as an adult and as a female leader, because I feel a level of competence across a broad array of fields. And I'm curious actually whether that's different in women and men, like whether the exposure to sports in youth and broad exposure versus a single vertical exposure, like that outcome later in life. Anyways, I'm taking us down a rabbit hole, but it seemed so obvious to me when you were speaking there that this was actually really beneficial for me.
Absolutely. And like, so the other way, like is actual, they say, call it vicarious performances, is another way that you can build self-efficacy. So it's not only your own performance, but watching people like you succeed, right? So like, that's why when you look at role modeling or modeling, it's so important, because if we had more female like leaders who are modeling something for us, that would help build our own self-efficacy, because watching someone like you succeed gives you that push and nudge to say, you know what, if she can do it, I can do it too. And, you know, I think we're at a very huge, there's a big, big paradigm shift and a big shift in consciousness generally happening all over the world. But I also think in entrepreneurship and in female leadership and in female empowerment, and what does it actually mean to be empowered as a woman? Like, I don't know about you, but a lot of people talk about female empowerment, but I don't know that what that actually even means. Like, when you look at it, like a lot of women aren't always necessarily so supportive of other women. So we talk about empowerment, but sometimes women are the ones that hold other women back, because there's like the scarcity mindset that, you know, there's only so much to go around. And if she's doing really well, like, what about me? As opposed to, on the contrary, what the research shows is like, if Megan is doing really well, then that actually nudges me and gives me the opportunity to also step into my leadership, you know, and having this more abundant mindset around, and we talked about this, and this is something you've talked about with me about, we've talked the scarcity versus abundance mindset, but the abundance mindset is that there's more than enough to go around, and that in actually by you doing well, that gives me the space to step into doing well as also.
Yes. And when you move out of that place of scarcity, and by move out of it, I don't mean you suddenly are bestowed with abundance, but you don't align and acquaint yourself with that mindset any longer. It sets a completely new standard for what you can achieve and output and visualize. And it is an extremely toxic layer of thinking to be stuck there.
Totally. And like, here's the thing, like I talk about this all the time with clients or just, you know, with friends, where the thing about the human mind and the ego mind, you know, the limbic system and where the ego resides, so to speak, is that, you know, it's always going to look for the negative. The ego and that the limbic system is always going to look for the fear, because that's how it's conditioned. It's very much a fight or flight reaction. And so to go into this other way of thinking really requires training and skill. And when you talk about mindset, mindset isn't like, you know, okay, like I understand there's abundance versus scarcity, I'm going to pick abundance. It's really cultivating. I always call it cultivating a skilled mind, because the mind, even if you have a skilled mind, I'm sure you have this too, Meg, and there's days where you just feel like, you know what, things feel like kind of crappy today. You know what I mean? And it takes something to move yourself into a more abundant mindset. And what I say that it takes is it actually takes the skill and the repetition and the daily practice, but it also takes the belief. You know, the belief is so important. You have to believe that you're going to succeed, because if you believe you're going to succeed, and then your reticular activating system is actually looking for the evidence that you can succeed. If you believe you can't succeed, you won't. You know, that there's that expression, like, whether you believe yes or no, like you're right kind of thing. So I think belief is so important when you're looking at mindset and you're looking at women and you're looking at leadership and you're looking at what's going on in that area. It's like, do they truly believe they can succeed and be successful in what they're doing?
So how do we start to shift that mindset? Because I feel like there's a lot of people who are like, I want to feel that way, but they're not there. They're like, when I'm really honest about it, they're like, I can't get past that negative, or I can't find evidence of success in my life. Or, you know what, that person is actually just better at the job than I am. Like, how do we break that?
So, oh my God, this is like my favorite topic ever. So basically,
and we didn't plan this.
We totally didn't plan this. I think that's always the best. So there's so many things going on when you talk about that. So I always bring it back to, you know, when I work with clients or the stuff that I'm doing with my new, you know, confidence stuff and the stuff at Harvard, is really looking at our childhood belief systems and imprints and how that actually very much creates our identity, and it actually creates our limiting beliefs about things. Okay. So when you say, like, how can we shift if someone doesn't believe that they can't find the evidence? So there's a few things. So one of the modalities I love using and I practice and I'm a practitioner of is cognitive behavioral therapy. I love CBT because it really shows us that our thoughts predict our behavior, like 100% of the time. For example, if you have a thought and it's an automatic thought, it happens so intrinsically, like you're not conscious to it. You have a thought that's like, you know what, this isn't going to work, I can't do this. Well, what's going to happen if you say, I can't do this, right, is you're going to feel a certain way. And how might you feel? You might feel frustrated. You might feel disempowered. You might feel anxious. And if you feel frustrated, disempowered, and anxious, what do you think your behavior is going to be?
Not abundant.
No, not abundant. Well, you're going to probably avoid. Yeah, exactly. You're going to avoid what you need to do, or you might even sabotage what you need to do. And then you get in the vicious cycle of you then sabotage or you avoid. And then you confirm your bias. You confirm that, well, I can't do this anyway, so therefore I'm right. Right. And that's just kind of like confirmation bias. That's like psychology 101. You're always going to confirm your own biases. So part of it is when I work with people, or and I see those limiting beliefs, it's about being understanding what the belief is and actually showing them that the validity of that thought, when you really deconstruct it and look at the evidence objectively, that thought's not very valid. That thought comes from some core belief or something that happened to us as a kid. It's a story. It's not really true. So, and I think when you can show people that sometimes their thoughts are stories or some version of something that happened a very long time ago that don't even, they're not valid for them now, then it unhooks them. It unhooks some of that, and it creates an opening for them to see something that's new, a new possibility, so to speak. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And the sabotage piece is so real. I see that in, I'm just talking about female leaders, but I see that in female leaders all the time, that we sabotage these opportunities for success. And I sit there sometimes in clinic with my patients and my jaw drops open. They're like, what? I'm like, do you hear what's just happened? Like, we just went full circle on the sabotaging of the opportunity. And they're like, oh, it's so pervasive.
Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think women sabotage? And it's not just women, it's men too, but you know, we're talking about women. I think women do it a lot. And I have my theory as to why they do it, but I wanted to hear, like, why, just based on what you're saying, like, why you think that.
Well, you know what? I'm going to speak only to my own experience. I think sometimes when I sabotage things, when I'm like out there and there's this potential to move forward, and I was like, oh, you did this. I don't know how to describe it. It feels like an energetic nakedness that you're like, I'm going to take this risk and I'm stepping out there. And it feels lonely sometimes standing out on this ledge. And then you're like, okay, I'm going to move forward. And I'm standing on this naked ledge again. And I'm on this naked. And I think that for women in leadership, we kind of feel like I feel sometimes like I'm walking the plank and I'm alone.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And I feel like I look over at the plank to my right and it's filled with a whole bunch of men with beers in their hands and they're all at the bar and they're like, it's cool, we'll walk the plank together. So, and which is not true. It's my own limiting beliefs. It speaks to the need to cultivate, in my perspective, community, where your community holds you to a higher standard. And
100%.
I was speaking about my experience in high school with my husband the other day, and he was like, what difference has it made now, the school that you went to? And I was like, the biggest difference it made for me is it set a standard for achievement and success and contribution that everyone was just expected to achieve. So the expectation was that you're going to go to university and you're going to do more education and that you're going to contribute, because that was the culture of where I went to school. And when there's no doubt that that's what you're supposed to do, then you don't feel as vulnerable. You don't think to sabotage what you're doing. When you're moving in and out of ongoing conversations about, well, am I supposed to be doing this? Can I do this? Can I balance all these pieces? You know, I think my role is this. I don't feel like we're all out on that bridge together.
Totally. Well, that's why they say the top is lonely. And it is, that's why entrepreneurship can feel so lonely, because, you know, here you are, you're the one creating the vision. You're the one that can see 10 steps ahead. You're already in some other future, but you have to sort of, then you're tethered to the reality, right? And the reality is that, you know, you're trying to, as a leader, to bring other people up with you. There's all these different competing demands. And so what happens, and how I describe it is this, when I talk about sabotage or limitation, is I call it like our own glass ceiling. Like you've reached your own, sometimes when you reach your own ceiling, it means like, and you've up-leveled to a certain point, and now you have to go to another layer, another level of consciousness, another layer altogether. Your ego mind, the fear-based conditioning, is a little bit like, I'm scared. I don't really know what's beyond that. And so I'm going to keep you here because that's safe. This container that you're in right now is safe, right? And so when you know that, when I know, for me, for example, and I'll just speak personally, this is even happening now. So here I am launching this new business, you know, putting my Harvard kind of research out there to talk about putting yourself on a ledge, right? Like doing something I've never done, really transitioning to something new. And I feel like there were certain moments where I was like, okay, this is I've kind of hit a ceiling here. Like I need to expand beyond this in order to create this new version of myself. But wait, people know me as this one thing and I have to create this new dimension, this new version of myself. And it's scary. Like your mind, your ego mind, your fear-based conditioning is going, well, Adele, that's kind of scary. And that's very, it's very vulnerable to be out there. Like, what if that doesn't work? And like, what's going to happen then? And so you shrink down to what you're comfortable with, which is like, you're kind of just back where you are. And so it takes something for me now. I know that's my litmus for going, okay, there's two ways to look at this. I can either keep doing what I'm doing and stay here in this little container, or I can expand myself, like my own personal self, in order to expand the container so that I can hold more. Does that make sense?
Totally.
So it's kind of, I always, the analogy I give people is like trying to shove an elephant into a vase, right? Like you just can't. And what I mean by that is the vase is you as a vessel, the container. And so this is why I always say to people, and this is why this new part of what I'm doing is such a passion of mine, not just mindset, but really that if you want to expand your business, I always say you have to go expand yourself. meaning you have to develop yourself. You have to do your mindfulness practice. You have to understand your limitations and your limiting beliefs. You want to do your meditation. You want to do all those things to expand your own container so that you can hold more. You can hold a higher vibration, because we're just talking about different things at different vibrations. Like for me, I now know that when I'm feeling really freaked out, I'm like, okay, that means I've hit a ceiling. And rather than wanting to go down, I actually think, okay, if I want to go up, I need to shift something. That means I might need to let something go. I might need to expand this container. I might need to look at what's actually holding me back so that I can go to that next level. So for me, I've actually reframed it as something quite exciting. Like I'm now embarking on something new that's really scary. But actually, if I just keep working on myself and staying centered and grounded and doing my practices and the stuff that I teach my clients, I can keep expanding myself so that I can hold more, as opposed to just sink down to, okay, well, that's scary, so I'm going to go back to what I was doing before.
I love this, because I think the thing about for us as women, and this is where I think all the self-talk and the banter in our own brains becomes engaged, is the reality is that I think that we are also carrying a heightened degree of diverse responsibility as women. So like right back to the, I did 10 activities as a kid, not just got really good at one, like planning my kids' sports stuff for the year and driving them to activities and being really concerned about that. Not to say that men aren't doing all of those pieces. I just think we own it in a different way. And we want to show up for all of these components. I think part of being a female leader is how we have that balance. And I love this idea that when you self-care mentally and emotionally and physically, you actually expand your capacity to do those different pieces. It's why it is such a limiting belief, ladies, that you don't have time for yourself. Like you can't do that. You can't do that and do it all. The secret to being able to do more is actually to do more for yourself.
Totally.
That wasn't a question. That was just me.
Yeah, that was a statement. That was a fact. No, it's so true. Like that goes back to, this is something that ties in perfectly. I think this is, since we're just going off the cuff and we're just doing a big brain dump.
We're in the state of flow.
We're in the state of flow. Absolutely. Flow state. So here's the thing, like part of why women do that. And I find myself doing that too, notwithstanding all the practices I've implored, like as a mom to my beautiful son, Elia, who's 3.5 and have been kind of more of a single mom for quite a while. First of all, you have to get over the whole mom guilt thing, right? The whole guilt of as a working mom, who's an entrepreneur, it's like, you know, I'm not as home as much as I want to be. And when I'm not home, I'm thinking about my son. And when I'm at work, when I'm home, I'm thinking about work. And you're everywhere all the time and you're nowhere at the same time. So that was something I had to learn to give up. And that was something that I really worked really hard on just being present to where I was. Like when I'm home, I'm home. And when I'm at work, I'm at work. And I am clear and I understand that that's what there is to do. The other piece is that, you know, for me, in order to function and operate at my highest capacity and be of highest service to my clients or my team or my son, it's about filling my tank up first. And one of the things that women do and we're taught to do, I think just as culturally and conditioning and everything, is that you fill up everybody else first and whatever is left in the tank is for you. But it's like, no, it's like that mask needs to go on you first so that you, like I talk about, like, you build up your container, you fill yourself up, you fill up your capacity to lead and to love, and then you're overflowing with it because love is infinite, right? As opposed to if you're coming and you're starting the day from scarcity, like there's not enough time, I don't have time to work out, I don't have time to meditate, my kids, this and that, you go into martyrdom, you go into this victim martyrdom, and this, I call it victim consciousness, which is such a low vibration. You know what I mean? Like you don't feel good when you're in victim. And this is something I teach, and this is something I'm going to be teaching in the work I'm doing, is that you always manifest and you always create from a high vibration state, a high vibration feeling state. So when you think back to any time in your life that you were in flow or creating amazing content or creating a new business, you were in a high vibration state. You were full of joy and curiosity and wonder and love and excitement. And you cannot create from a low vibration state. If you're feeling anxious, depressed, overwhelmed, frustrated, and resigned, well, you're not going to create anything from there, you know, or you might create more of that feeling. So that's why I always say that my most important practice in the morning, if I'm waking up and I feel a little off that day, I go and I have to center myself. I like meditate, or I do my affirmations, or I do some of my daily practice, because it shifts the entire day if I start my day off well. It's why I do my workouts in the morning and I meditate, and I literally pour a lot of love into myself first so that I can pour love into others. And that is not selfish, ladies. That is actually how you lead effectively. You can't lead effectively if your barrel is completely empty.
I feel like this is the foundation of the blueprint of the female leader.
Yes, this is the foundation of the blueprint of the female leader. This is the paradigm. This is my sort of next, this is my quest and my crusade is to like, and this kind of came from too, working with CEO women one-on-one in my practice and just hearing so much of that kind of victim martyrdom thing. Like, you know, well, I've got to pick up my kids from school. And I'm not saying that that's not real. Like, that's real for people.
Oh, it's real.
It's real. And I get it. There are all those considerations. Absolutely. And there's ways of making small shifts. Like, it's not about spending, you know, 24 hours meditating, but it's about literally having a shift in your mindset that looks like, you know what, I deserve to give myself love too. You know, it looks like I am worthy of love and support in my life. It's like all those beliefs that we have, it's really turning them on our heads and saying things like, and this is something I teach, is like really understanding how affirmations work and all those other fun things. But if you truly start to really look at some of your limiting beliefs and limitations and ideas of the world or imprints, whatever you want to call them, if you've got a belief or an imprint or, you know, a limiting belief that looks like, you know, I'm not worthy of love or I'm not worthy of something, well, guess what? You are going to find evidence your entire life of that belief, because that's what your mind will seek. And if you start to really understand that when you pour more love into yourself, you feel and you become worthy of love for yourself, you become a far better mother, a far better spouse, a far better leader, a far better human, period. And if all of us were actually took responsibility for our mindset and for creating a skilled mind, I think we would have a very different world. I don't know if you believe that to be true, but that's a very firm belief that I have.
I do. I think that we talk about responsibility in all sorts of ways, and we're really good as a society of externalizing responsibility. I have responsibility for my kids. I have responsibility for my mortgage. I have responsibility. We do that. And I actually think when we engage in that as women, we are, again, we're moving into that martyrdom state, that ongoing externalization. You actually, first and foremost, have to take responsibility for yourself.
100%. But and that's why I think, like, you know, this is when we talk about like really changing what female leadership looks like, it's that it's really empowering women to work on themselves and cultivate the mindset and really pour love back into themselves first so that they can then give more to others, as opposed to coming from a place of I'm so depleted. And from here, I'm trying to do all these other things. And it's why so many women, and you talk about this a lot, so many women in leadership experience burnout. Well, burnout is literally when you're in martyrdom for very long in that victim kind of mode, it leads to burnout because you're just doing more and more and more and more and more without replenishing the fuel in your car. You're just like more and more and more.
I really think this is an important conversation to have. And the objection that came into my own mind, which I felt like I was channeling from others while you were talking, is that, but wait objections. A second, right? Like, we're talking about all this like personal development to be leaders. They don't have to do that, right?
Who doesn't?
All the men. They, oh, okay. I'm not picking a man, like poor men who are still listening. Like I just listen, you're getting all the secret talk. But I think historically, I talk about this generally, I think there is a significant deficit of leadership in our culture right now in general. And the tools that have enabled people to rise to the top in the past, and rising to the top to me is not necessarily synonymous with leadership. I just believe that those tools are becoming antiquated very rapidly as the diversity of problems that we have are increasing, and our ability at like social media and our communication tools have made it that we have access to understanding our problems in an unprecedented way. And I think the resolution of them are going to require a new level of consciousness with respect to leadership. And this is what you're talking about. And when people talk about the rise of female leadership, we are intuitively conscientious to these ideas, and doing it like it's always been done is not how we're going to have our turn. It's doing it how we do it best and how we do it intuitively and naturally and powerfully as women that are going to be able to, I think, in an unprecedented way, start to address some of the things that are so problematic for our society. They say that you are the product of the five people with whom you spend the most time. Imagine you could spend time with hundreds of fellow entrepreneurs and go-getters looking to uplevel their business, body, and mindset. The Entrepology Collective does not belong to us. It belongs to you. Come hang out with us on Facebook and let us collectively inspire, support, and cheerlead you towards your vision for contribution, your commitment towards better health, and your journey of mindset mastery. We are in this together. We are entrepreneurs by birth, by choice, and by mission. We are the Entrepology Collective. Search for us on Facebook and come join your tribe.
This is the perfect segue to like talking about masculine and feminine leadership. Like I love, this is one of my favorite things to talk about. And it's funny because I was talking about this with one of my clients yesterday who's a female leader. And I said, you know, I brought up masculine and feminine leadership. She's like, what does that mean? And this is my point is like, this is something that's intuitive in us, but we don't have an understanding of what that means. So I'd love to talk a little bit about that with you, because I think it's important for people to understand that there's a masculine way to lead and there's a feminine way to lead. And those are different traits, and both are really necessary and important, but it's important to have them in balance. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I think we should talk about it.
Okay, great. Because that's kind of what you're alluding to, but I'd love to give it a framework.
I have an idea. Framework. Let's do a podcast about it.
Perfect. So I love talking about masculine and feminine leadership. And this is part of my research. This is part of when I talk about female leadership and confidence and all these things. Part of it is that what you just basically said, which was brilliant, is that this old style of leadership, and this is what the evidence is actually showing about leadership, when you look at the research on leadership, is that that dictatorial, very masculine way to lead. By the way, let me just clarify, just because I'm saying masculine energy and feminine doesn't mean I mean male and female. Everyone, every human has both energies, both male and female. And it's just where you're dominating from. So, you know, the way that leadership used to run, especially in corporate, especially like when you look at banks and those types of very corporate institutions, everything was very much led from a masculine perspective. So what I mean by that is some masculine qualities are decision-making and can be a bit dictatorial or maybe aggressive. It could be a bit like, here's how it's going to be. So men, you know, the masculine energy is problem solving. It's rational. It's analytical. It's very in the doingness of things. Okay. The feminine energy to leadership is collaboration, empathy, compassion. It's the receiving, it's the beingness of things. So we all have a masculine and feminine energy or part of us. It's kind of like the yin and the yang. And what's happening in the world of leadership, and this is what everyone's talking about in leadership now, is that there's this shift towards wanting a more feminine energy or style of leadership, not just a masculine style, you know, wanting collaboration, wanting more empathy, more compassion, wanting different aspects, wanting to collaborate with other people and not just being told what to do. So it's important to understand that one is not better than the other, but when we're too far on one, when we're too dominant in our masculine, and we basically annihilate the feminine natures that we have, especially women, we're not actually utilizing all of our true brilliance. I call it like our superpower as a female leader, especially like you and I, when I think about some of the leaders that I, you know, you're one of the leaders I love because you're ambitious, which is a very masculine quality, but you're also super compassionate, you know? So there's ways to use both of those in a nice balance, because you don't want to be two on one side or the other. Does that make sense?
Completely.
Yeah. So this is from my own lived experience, is like, I remember when I first started my business, even up until the last 5 years ago, when I started to delve more into the masculine and the feminine leadership styles, you know, I used to lead for my masculine so hard. I mean, people were like, you're so ambitious, but I was driving in my masculine so much. I didn't even know what it meant like to be in my feminine. And I remember going to like an event a few years ago, and And some of the women that were there were like, yeah, like you're really in your masculine. And I like thought that was a compliment. And then I realized it wasn't really a compliment. But guess what? When you're a woman and you're so in your masculine at work, what do you think happens when you come home? You're also in your masculine. And then I was wondering, why am I still single? How come I can't keep a relationship? Like, because I basically lived my life in my masculine. So I got a lot of stuff done, but I didn't know how to be. I didn't know how to be in my feminine. I didn't know how to receive love and support in my life. I didn't know what true partnership felt like because I was literally just like used to doing everything. And then confirmation bias at its fullest is I had a child and I became a single mom. So I had to be the mom and the dad and at work with the team. And I was like really in my masculine, right? And the biggest shift I had spiritually and in my business and in my life is when I really understood how to start to cultivate this self-love, and not from like a hokey when people talk about self-love and they're just like self-love, but actually understand what self-love is and really understand how my childhood impacted my identity and why I became this very driven person, and start to heal some of those wounds, and then start to add on meditation and affirmations and breath work and personal growth and all the things. And I started to be able to understand and cultivate the feminine in me. That's when my business flourished. That's when I met my current partner, who's now my fiance. And that was like never possible for me. Like, you got to get that, like, people that know me well, you know, I really had it like I'm going to be single forever, because, you know, I couldn't be in my masculine at work and come home and be in my feminine, right? I was just masculine all the time. And this happens to, think about as I'm saying this, Meg, how many women do you know that are like that? Like a million, all of my girlfriends who are entrepreneurs, who are like, shout out to you who are listening, you know who you are. You know, it's like, I look at so many of my awesome, we call them badass boss babes, and they're badass, but they haven't really dug into like what it is to be a woman in your feminine energy and the divineness of that. And it's a superpower truly, because if you can understand that leading and being super driven and ambitious, but also being really compassionate and being really centered and being really empathetic and being really grounded in those other things and collaborative and learning how to go between one and the other in a beautiful dance. And that's actually like a superpower that men have as well, by the way. Like, men are some of the men I know in my life are incredible leaders, but it's because they don't just dominate from their masculine, they know how to cultivate the feminine. And I'm sure you can think of some men in your life too who are amazing leaders because they have that softness.
100%.
Yeah. So that's why I like to distinguish that for people, because it's not like men are good and bad or women are good. This is not I love men. And I think that some of the men in my life who've been mentors are the most phenomenal leaders I know. It's the ones that are actually able to balance both those masculine and feminine qualities. And some of the women that I know who are, like you talk about, they may be at the top of the organization, but they're not very good leaders. It's because it's truly because they've never really known that it's safe to step into their feminine leadership styles, because that used to be, like you called, antiquated. That used to be considered like a weakness, right? Like, you know, you used to go to your job and if a woman would cry, they'd be like, oh, is she on her period? It's like, no, I'm feeling all the feelings, and that's actually a good thing.
Yeah, no, and listen, I know there are also women who are listening, and they're like, I get it, and I hear you. I still am in the upper ranks in my organization, and the culture isn't there yet. And that's the thing about being warriors of female leadership. And I understand the juxtaposition in that phrase, but warriors of female leadership, where it's like you, there's a real opportunity for you to actually step into it regardless and show people what's possible. Like, that is the new version of breaking the glass ceiling, is saying, listen, I'm actually not going to do it like you. I'm going to do it differently. And I will speak from my own experience. I resisted that for so long because the masculine worked. It's a really fast car and it kind of plows through things and it gets you further ahead on that road. And what you start to believe is, well, that's always worked for me. And then until it wasn't working for me anymore. And I felt like I pulled into the station and it was like the end of the road. It was like, you have to get into a new vehicle now. And everything blossomed.
That's such a beautiful analogy. Well, the whole concept of it worked until it didn't, like the inverted U and statistics, and you look at like at a certain point, you know, a certain level of arousal will achieve optimal performance, but too much of a good thing will actually have you burn out. My point in saying that is when you are in your masculine for so long and you're driving from that, like that place only, I always say you can totally achieve from there because I have too, but it always comes at a cost, right? And the cost might be cost of health. You and I talk about that with our clients. It could be cost of relationship with self, depression, anxiety. Like, where does depression and anxiety come from? It comes from burnout. It comes from lack of sleep. It comes from lack of taking care of self. It comes from not being in alignment with your truth. Yes, there's clinical reasons why people are depressed, but a lot of those reasons are emotional. We know that. They're emotional. They're when you're not giving yourself what you need, right? I know when I'm feeling burnt out, anxious, and depressed, the first thing I look at is I go, where am I out of alignment and where am I out of integrity with myself? Meaning like, have I not gotten enough sleep lately? Have I been extending myself to things and people and places that don't make me feel good anymore? Have I maybe, you know, not worked out as much this week as I want to? Have I not fueled myself or drank enough water? I always look at where, if I'm feeling off energetically, emotionally, I always look at, okay, what's going on and where was I out of integrity this week? Does that make sense?
100%.
Yeah. Where I think a lot of people go is they go, what's wrong with me? Oh, I'm off. Like there must be something wrong with me, which is like a very big like belief and imprint for a lot of women is there must be something wrong with me. But it's not that there's something wrong with you. It's just that you're not fully maybe honoring yourself, or maybe you're hanging out with people, places, and things that don't serve you anymore. When we talk about the new car, I love that analogy of like, you drove a certain car, now you need a new one. I like to use the analogy of like, it's the changing of the guards. So there's a certain guard that got you to this place. But in order to get to that place, you actually have to change the guard. It has to be, there's like a new iteration of yourself. And I'm going through that like literally right now, like literally in this moment, like in this last week, 2 weeks, I'm so confronted, if I'm being totally honest. And this is like, I love to share this from a place of truth and lived experience. It's so confronting when you're changing the guards. It's so confronting when you're going to this next iteration of self, because it kicks up your ego. It kicks up your identity. It kicks up all those beliefs that you have about yourself. And it actually also kicks up where there's certain things that I used to do that don't serve me anymore, don't feel good anymore. So I've had to let go of certain things, people, places, and things that haven't served me, don't serve me anymore, in order for me to go to this next level. And it is very confronting. You know, it's not easy. It's not always easy to be self-actualized. It's not easy to be leading. It's not easy, like you said, to be on that ledge by yourself, but it's also so, it can be so fulfilling, especially when you recognize that there's certain things that worked for you and they don't work for you anymore. And you have to let certain things go.
Absolutely. And I so appreciate your honesty in that. And I will also just add, it's also not easy just to stand still.
Yeah.
So like, if you know, no matter what happens, it's not easy, but one moves you to a place of abundance and fulfillment, and one leaves you vulnerable to depression, lack of actualization, not being able to live your purpose. Like, get on our bandwagon here. Because there's some cool, it's not easy. It's just, it's period, not easy. It was really easy till about grade three. And then we started like, then the hard crept in. Right. And I kept thinking when I'm an adult, there'll be times when it's easy. And now what I've realized is like, no, I'm just going to reset my barometer to there's ongoing everyday opportunities for growth. Mm-hmm. And they're a bit uncomfortable, and that's so cool.
Totally. It's so cool. And I think it is like, if I can, you know, give people like one thing to take, really big thing to take away is like, every time you feel like you're hitting a ceiling, or every time you feel like it's scary, rather than going inward and going like, okay, there must be something wrong with me, or this isn't safe, or, you know, I invite you to look more like, okay, like I'm about to change the guards. Like something is shifting. I'm shifting to another level, another version of myself. And that might require for me to take a really hard, honest look in my life and go, what are the people, places, and things that I've been doing that might not be serving me anymore? Because it's like the analogy that I love to give is when you're taking a rocket to space, the actual air, the craft has to let go of certain pieces of itself to get into orbit, right? That's how it works. Because what got it to space like no longer works anymore. So there's parts of you as you ascend to different layers and levels of yourself as a woman, as a leader, in consciousness, you have to let go of certain things that don't serve you anymore. And those things can be beliefs, ideas, ideologies, imprints, people, like actual physical places. Like I've even found that recently, like places that I used to go that used to feel really good don't necessarily feel good anymore. And so I always just say, be really curious about what you're doing and where you might not be, it might not be serving you anymore. And just come from a curious mind and going, oh, interesting. Like, I wonder why that's not feeling great anymore. And I wonder if I actually didn't go there for a little bit, if that would impact me in a positive way. So there's always different ways to look at something. And I think that the fear is always going to be there because it's just how the mind works. And it's like, what can you do to transcend that fear is really always the question.
I just want to say, I'm so excited that, you've got some upcoming stuff happening,
yes.
But I know that within our audience, we have a lot of practitioners that hang out with us on the Anthropology Podcast. And I'm really super excited and honored that you are going to be presenting two workshops at Impact Lives.
Woohoo! I know, I'm so excited.
One of which, I'm just going to call it out so everyone knows what's going to happen here. Like my goal with Impact is you walk through the door and you're never the same again. Sorry, like if you want to stay the same, don't come. But you're never going to be the same again. And what we have planned with Adele in the afternoon is a group therapy session around one's mindset of abundance versus scarcity. And we're literally going to do group therapy for 200 entrepreneurs in one room at one time. And we are going to level up the vibration of that room and you're never going back.
Nope. I'm so it's my favorite. I love how you call it group therapy.
I tell everyone, I was like, guys, we're in for it. But yes.
Well, you're like, I hope you make people cry. I said, oh yeah, I love making people cry. Tears of happiness, you know,
yes.
But basically, yeah, no, it's going to be fantastic because what we're going to do is just like a really experiential. This is the work that I do when I went to corporate, and this is the work I'm doing in my own upcoming events, but it's this experiential look at what are some of our limiting beliefs and actually taking people through the framework to actually shift those beliefs once and for all. Because I always say, right, when you're operating with something in your blind spot, which by the way, all of us are always operating with something in the blind spot until it's no longer in the blind spot and then you know it's there, that's where you can go to work on changing something. If you don't know what you don't know, like you don't know there's something in the blind spot, well, step one is you have something in your blind spot. If you're not where you want to be in your life in any area, with your health, with your relationships, with your finances, there's something holding you back. Okay. And once you're clear on what that thing is that's holding you back, that's when you can go to work on it. So that's what we're going to be doing with this 200 group of people. It's going to be so exciting. I love it because you'll never be the same again.
And people keep saying, and they should ask this question, well, what kind of return on investment will I get at this event? And I was like, your life, you'll never be the same. And I have to say for myself, like starting to relinquish limiting beliefs around earning potential and contribution potential and how many people we can serve at one time has had massive financial return, but more importantly, impact return. Like that's my primary barometer. And so I will just say, if you're like, I want to impact people, there's only one session and everyone's going to do it. And you're like, you won't be the same again. So
I feel super honored that you're putting me in that. No pressure.
No pressure, Adele. No pressure. Hey, you, if you're a colleague, if you're a practitioner, if you are seeing patients, if you are looking to up-level your impact in the health and wellness space, I wanted to let you know that we are hosting one heck of an amazing event taking place on November 21, 22, 23 in Toronto. Impact Lives is our signature flagship event that takes place on an annual basis, and it is a coming together of some of the most impactful people in the health and wellness industry. Over the 3 days, we are unpacking the mindset that has been holding you back from achieving the impact you have always dreamed of. We are spending a day looking at new tactics and techniques, some of the things that people are using in a cutting edge capacity to take their impact and their practice to the next level. And if you want to join us for our VIP bonus day, we are going deep in a workshop setting, 6 different workshops to up-level your mindset, your business, and your impact. Impact Lives is an incredible experience. And our promise to you this year is that when you walk through the door, you will not be capable of leaving as the same person you were when you arrived. If you want to learn more about how you can participate in Impact Lives, check us out online, www.impactlivesevent.com. I cannot wait to see you there. This is a really perfect place. So clearly, I said at the beginning, we could jam on this all day. And I think everyone's getting a sense that we could really do that, which means we're going to have to do this again. But I want to transition the interview. I've got 6 rapid fire questions for you. I call these our KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in business, we have them in our lives. So we just want to get a behind the scenes look at Adele Tevlin. You ready?
Okay.
Everyone's always like, oh gosh. And then they're like, oh, that was so easy.
That's fine.
Who is inspiring you right now?
Honestly, like, I don't want to sound super cheesy, but you would be one of the people that's inspiring me right now. And I'll say that because, and I'm not just saying it because you're there, but you really do inspire me, because you are always walking on the ledge, often by yourself, with a smile on your face and super loving and compassionate. I'm also super inspired by how you've transitioned your business lately and really let go of some of the things that don't serve you. So you're actually one of my key people when I think of, especially women, you'd be one of them.
Oh, that's so nice of you.
It's true. It's true.
Thank you.
It's the truth. Yeah.
I'm trying to receive. Thank you.
Yeah.
Feeling exactly. Is so mutual. Right. Moving on. No, thank you. Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
I always read personal development books. Like, I'm reading Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh.
So it good.
Is. I know. It's so good. Oh, so good. So I'm reading that. I'm kind of, one of my biggest problems is I read a bunch of different books at the same time. But I just finished The Surrender Experiment by Michael Singer. Amazing. If you haven't read any Michael Singer, you need to read Michael Singer. And then now I'm reading Conversations with God.
Well, those are powerful books.
Yes.
What is one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Working out every day. I'm active every day. So I'm either in the gym training, or I'm doing Pilates twice a week, or I walk everywhere. I'm active every day. It is for me, not about the physical benefits of it are one thing, but it's my mental, emotional. I noticed that my mood, my affect, my creativity, just how I feel about myself. Like, when I've got my endorphins pumping in the morning, it makes the biggest difference. Yeah. So that would say that.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know? Yes.
I don't even know what that means. Something badass about myself that people would otherwise not know.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, but it's like something, super cool behind the scenes people don't know. Like you do crazy stuff on your Instagram with Pilates. That's pretty badass.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good example. So pretty badass about me. Yeah. I was a professional dancer, trained dancer for like 18 years. So I love Pilates, and my Pilates instructor loves doing like crazy acrobatic stuff with me. So that's super fun. So I find that I'm in my zone of genius when I'm moving my body and when I'm flowing and dancing and like doing like cool Pilates stuff. So yes, that would be one of them.
What do you do for fun or play?
Honestly, like, my favorite thing to do is hang out with Dave and Ilya, my son and my fiance. And we do lots of parks, and we literally, I think having my son has, and I'm sure every parent would say this, like, it's really brought me back to wonder and curiosity and play. And I really use that time with my son to like play, like run around the park and play with him in ways that, because life can be so serious when you're an entrepreneur and everything. And I think that time with him is so fun because I just get to be a kid again.
Totally. So true. And last question for you, Adele, entrepreneurism, are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Honestly, that is such an interesting question. I think we're born this way. I really do. And I think you can learn it, but I think I think it's something that's just innate in us sometimes, because I got to tell you, it is really, being an entrepreneur can be so hard. Talk about the path of most resistance, you know? And I think that, like, it's true. It is not the path of least resistance. It is an uphill climb until it's not. And then it is again. But I think we're born this way in some ways, because I would consider myself always, and you're probably similar, to have been a nonconformist. I didn't like people telling me what to do. I always saw things from a different perspective. I never really fit into a box. And I didn't know that that was called entrepreneurship. I just knew I was different. And then when I became an entrepreneur, I started to join and meet in groups and meet other entrepreneurs like Archangel or all these other Dovetail, all these other groups I'm part of. I was like, oh, that's just like what it is to be like an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't like to be told what to do. You like to create. I'm very creative. And I think growing up, like, I was very academic and I always did really well, excelled in math and science. And so my parents were like, you know, you need to go to med school or dental school. And I thought I would do that. But the truth is that I'm actually quite a visionary, but that part of myself was never really cultivated until later on in my life. So yeah, I think the answer to that is, I think you're born this way. Baby, you're born this way.
We will end on Lady Gaga, speaking of strong female leaders. Adele, you're up to so many cool things. Where can we send people to follow you and learn more about this next leadership iteration?
That's so cool. Thank you. So you can follow me at Adele Wellness. So my, you know, AdeleWellness.com. My Instagram handle is Adele_wellness. Facebook page is actually the CEO Blueprint, which is the name of my new venture, CEO Blueprint. So you can either find me at Adele Wellness or the CEO Blueprint on Facebook and Instagram, and on my website. And I look forward to, I'm so excited for Impact Lives. And I'm so excited for group therapy and just for our future collaborations together. I love you long time, Megs.
I know. I'm so stoked. Adele, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Okay, bye everyone.
I told you this interview was fun. If you enjoyed it as much as I did, please share your thoughts over on iTunes. We so appreciate your reviews and feedback. It is instrumental in enabling us to reach more people. As always, the show notes and the links and all the things we talked about can be found in our show notes over on my website, meganwalker.com/podcast/episode-135. Until we chat again, go build something amazing.